Hello, and welcome to the Cubicorn Games Podcast. My name is Dustin Morbido. We have an extremely exciting show tonight. It's going to be a good-ass time, I think.
The energy is through the roof.
I'm trying to bring it up from like my usual
low. I'm going to bring it down. I'm
low.
Gonna take it so bad, I'm tired.
Low. Usually I'm low to mid. Today I'm going to try to be a little bit higher than that.
And I'm in the dumpster around the corner.
joining me in the room to bring me down to the dumpster, Lorraine Morbido is here.
It's what I do. It's my job.
And then joining us through the internet, we had talked about this a little on the last show, I think, that we wanted to do this.
Probably, I guess.
And so
who knows?
We were able to put it together, but we have two of the developers of Rightfully Bury Arms that are here to talk to us about their game a little bit, their experience demoing at PAX, and I don't know, whatever else we end up talking about. But if you guys want to introduce yourselves, feel free.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm one of the devs on Rightfully Bury Arms. I'm also dumpster to mid range usually. So.
Glad to hear it. We're all got the similar energy.
I'm April. I'm also part of the Rightfully Bury Arms team, and yeah, I feel like I vibe with you guys. My mood's pretty mid right now.
I feel like that's just it, where I'm usually at with game stuff while I'm in it. Because like I said, we've been at it for the last couple weeks, getting like little bits of stuff here and there done. Mm-hmm. Like nothing amazing, but like a little bit of progress every week or so. But when I'm in that like steady chugging groove, I feel like I'm always kind of like on the lower end of things until we like have a major update to show for it. And then I pick right back up. But
and I've spent the past two days dealing with the public for 8 hours. So I'm spent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's terrible.
That.
But yeah, it's a pleasure to have you. And so we have played Rightfully Bury Arms on our little stream before. We've got a podcast episode about it a couple episodes back. If people want to hear our opinions on it, I would recommend it. But
both the podcast and the game.
If you happen to not, I meant the game, but I guess the podcast too. I was summing up the podcast opinion previously of yes, it is a cool game and I would recommend it. But in case somebody does not want to go back and check that stuff out, could you give us a little, just like a little pitch of like what the game is like and why people should go out and buy it?
Yeah, it's a bullet hell shooter. Roguelite that puts a little bit more emphasis on, I think, like strategy and planning progression. So similar to other bullet hells, but at the end of the dungeon, you clear, you can kind of choose and influence the next dungeon's rewards. There's meta progression. You also choose how to upgrade and make the enemy more difficult. So you kind of have to min-max your builds and your runs.
Sure. The positive you're stacking for yourself versus like which negatives you want to spec into like over the course of the run.
Yeah.
And I will say again, the art is very cute and very cool. The gameplay feels pretty tight. Like I enjoy physically playing it.
Yeah, it's a punny game.
Yeah.
For sure. Oh yes,
my
and it is
specialty.
Very yeah. When I was playing the other day, I was playing the latest build and when I saw the the Mac 10 and cheese or whatever that submachine gun. I was like, that's pretty fucking funny.
In this household, we stand the battery boys wholeheartedly.
Okay, yeah.
That's some good stuff. But yeah, for sure.
I appreciate that.
They're great.
So yeah, you can check it out now. It is on Steam. It's available for early access, and I would highly recommend it. If that sounds like the genre of game that you're into, I think it is a good one of those. So I would definitely recommend you go and check it out. And I would, again, love to have you guys on in the future because I know you have a third developer. Anytime you want, you let me know, and we can have a deeper dive about the game itself, whether it's like around that 1.0 release or sometime before or after that.
Oh, yeah.
We can absolutely sit down, and I would love to hear more about the nuts and bolts of the creation and where your guys' heads are at.
Yeah,
that'd be cool.
So yeah, for sure, hit me up for that. But for today, I think we're going to talk a little less about the game itself and a little more about your guys' experience exhibiting at PAX East. And this is a thing I've wanted to talk to at least some developers for a while. And like there are people in our area who've done various PAXes that I've just never, like our schedules have never lined up.
Yeah.
I've never been able to like seal the deal. But we met you guys at MAGFest, which was a ton of fun.
Woo!
Oh, yeah.
Yeah! Woot woot.
And you've been gracious enough to share some of your time with us tonight. But you guys have also exhibited at PAX at least once or twice. So to start us off, tell us about that. How many times have you guys shown off at PAX East?
I think this past time was our third time, right, April?
Yes, this was our third PAX.
Yeah, every time I feel like we just like learn something different, and it's not quite the same as other cons, at least from my perspective, and it's a little more intense. So I feel like we're getting better at it each time.
That's awesome. Well, that's how I feel about cons in general. So it's nice to hear that, like, for something that big, there's still that room to to iterate.
Oh, yeah,
where you're like,
sure.
This is better than last year. But like, we do a little more. And
Yeah. Each time it's been different, and I think we're so lucky because we live in the area. Like, we live in the Boston area, where that's where PAX East is based out of. So it's kind of nice that that's like our home con.
Yeah, sure.
also is like probably one of the biggest ones in like the Western world, I think, right now.
No,
so,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just for clarification, as the conversation goes on, we are going to be exclusively talking about PAX East here, but I might just end up saying PAX because it's just easier.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's a PAX West, technically its own different show. I'm assuming they're very similar, but just for the people at home to know. How close are you guys? Do you commute into the show every day, or do you have to, or have you gotten a hotel like downtown to be even closer to the action?
We commute just to kind of save on money, and it's not that far. The Thursday mornings, I always forget, it's the worst because it's like Boston traffic.
Yeah,
people are going into work.
It's a work day still.
Yeah, so we have to like remember to wake up extra early for that day. It's also like the first day of it, so like you want to make sure everything's like good to go before everything goes.
Yeah.
But then like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's usually way easier to commute in.
That's
sorry,
nice.
April. I cut you off.
Yeah, April,
no, it's okay. They usually open up on the first day. I think it starts at 10, but they open up at 9 for just the press.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's like you have to be there earlier anyway, but then you also have to be there or like leave even more earlier.
Yeah, the headway you need to have in front of you is earlier because of that.
For sure. And that's a window of time you wouldn't want to miss, right? Like if there's even a small chance that someone like wider reach would want to lay hands on your thing, you want to give them the opportunity. Mm-hmm. So you certainly want to be ready to go.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And by Sunday, you're like strolling in
right,
10 minutes before because you just know what switches to flip off. Mm-hmm. It's like routine, and then
I mean that's true of like con attendees too, though. Of like, I feel like by Sunday morning, everybody's like hungover enough. Just like the general public is like, yeah, I'll show up around noon, maybe. You know, it's fine.
Yeah, the Sunday crowd's a lot different. It's like most people are either flying out in a couple hours or something like that. Like they're not spending the whole day there. And it's just usually a lot more relaxed, which is nice.
There's always such an interesting energy on the last day of a con, which generally happens to be Sunday most times because it's like over a weekend or whatever. But just the mood, because like you can kind of feel like the opposite anticipation of it starting. It's like the slow wind down. It's like everyone's dragging, not just the people at the booths, but like the attendees. Mm-hmm. Like everyone's kind of like just over it because it's been like days, but they're still having fun and just... It's such a mood.
Yeah, we're all like slap happy.
Yeah,
I was gonna say we get a little loopy Sunday. That's been the comment of like people that know us and maybe come in to meet up with us after or help us tear down and.
It happens to the best of us for sure, but like you said, that's just kind of the thing of like you're kind of going at it all cylinders for 4 days straight.
Mm-hmm.
So by the end, you just got very little left to give at some point. So since we're talking about the show in general and the startup of the show, I'm going to bounce around a little bit. Once you get on site, what is the setup process like? Do you set up the day before on like Wednesday? Is it all like Thursday early morning? Or
I think in general it's been the day before for us. You get assigned a sign up time or a move in time.
Okay.
Yeah. And generally like everyone that's not like hiring union guys to come in and stuff like that, I think is the day before. And you know, it's like those AAA studios or like III studios that just have a ton of money to spend at PAX. They need the extra days to they literally bring in cranes, right?
Yeah, like and, building their giant like setups and like displays
exactly
and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it wasn't this past year, but the last year it was like Tiny Build, Apogee. I don't know. They went crazy. Mm. But this past year, it was a lot more relaxed. I feel like the booths, but
yeah, Devolver had like a whole
Devolver
like,
too
theater setup because it was like Cult of the Lamb.
Oh,
it was still rather new, so like they had a whole ton of stuff to give away. But like it was basically like a building inside that they had.
Oh, yeah,
it was. Really
the
cool
Tiny
looking.
Build one was like a circus. It literally looked like a circus tent, and it was pretty cool to go into. Yeah. Yeah, but then you usually get a slot the day before. And then you can like even like get time in the load-in dock and stuff like that. We've learned just to skip the load-in dock. Mm-hmm. We just find parking that's pretty close, and it's usually a lot faster, and you don't have to deal with like semi trucks that are literally like backing in like thousands of computers and stuff like that. So
no, for sure, that's been our experience with other shows too. I would say first of all, get a hand cart, like get something that you can push or pull with one person. That can load up more stuff than you can carry in your arms. And then secondly, yeah, I would definitely, if you're like a solo dev or just a handful of people and you're setting up like a 10 by 10 booth, I would do the same thing from our experience. I would find the closest, most reasonable parking structure you can and just, you know, set your car up in there and take as many trips as you need to get all your stuff out.
April's been in charge of all of like the... You've gotten us like these like hand carts. You've gotten the, I don't know, they're these like giant carts that we can get from like Walmart and stuff like that. But then she got this like really nice one that like folds up to like, you know, it's feels like it's maybe 3 or 4 inches thin. And, but we can are able to put a ton of crap on it. So it's nice.
Yeah, we're learning how to like bungee stuff together so it's not falling all over the place. Like there was another con where like Chris like whapped himself.
A
bungee cord like hit him in the head, and we're like, okay, let's get thicker ones. So like by packs we're like, okay, like these are the things that can get stacked on each other, and this is like how you bungee everything together. And
that's amazing.
Lots of wheelie things. It's really, really helpful.
No, for sure. And it's important not to undersell that stuff too, because again, if you're, I still don't can't believe how like individual solo people do it, like making a game singularly by yourself. But that kind of effort of like just figure out the basic logistics of like what stuff we need to bring and like how best to most easily transport it, you know, in a car and then like in a series of loads onto the site is such a big important part of that stuff, that like having somebody like you, April, or either that who is doing that exclusively or has that as more of their job is like invaluable for sure. Because between Lorraine and I, it's always, you know, a little bit of back and forth. I've done more of a little everything recently just because I'm doing game stuff functionally full time at this point. So I certainly do more on average than she does across the board in terms of that kind of thing. But it is immensely helpful to have somebody else, like at least one other person to do that stuff and like bounce ideas off of. Make sure you're not going nuts.
It's definitely helpful, I will say, to know the dimensions of your stuff.
Ahead
of time. So we were like sketching things ahead of time, like figuring out what layouts we'd want to try. And I think we've been getting better each year, because the first year it was just kind of like, oh, we'll figure it out when we get there. And that's when we were like, oh, it'd be helpful to have this. Or you just like don't have the brain capacity to do problem solving like that, because there's just like so much else going on. So anything you can like plan ahead of time, like it never looks exactly like we sketch it out, but it's been helpful to like have different things to try out.
No, for sure. And like you said, if you have anybody can sketch stuff out, so you, like you decide no matter what your like living situation is, if you're in a one-bedroom apartment, like buy graph paper and do a lot like that. And then I would suggest, if you are fortunate enough, like if you have a large enough living space, like if you live in like a small house that's got a basement or whatever, like go ahead and set up like your space beforehand. If you've got roughly like a 10 by 10 space that you happen to be able to like procure in your home, like do it, just see how it feels, check what the vibes are. We've done that in little bits before. We've never done like full signage and everything, like here's a table, here's a table.
Yeah,
just,
especially
like, how does this feel?
Before MAGFest specifically, because we knew that the space was like a little bit different than some of the other shows that we've been to before. We had like set up some of our tables that we didn't even end up really using at the show, because we just went with the ones that they had there because their dimensions were a little bit more convenient. But yeah, we've done that where we'll like kind of mock it up, like at least vaguely, because like we know like the rough dimensions of like our signage and like how things work, and like we don't need to set up the computers because we know where they go and stuff like that. So just kind of visualizing part of it in either like a sketch, because I mean I've done that too, I've helped you like map that out before, or physically, is very helpful
for sure. But speaking of the pack stuff specifically, when you get so I'm assuming you guys, like as indie developers, like the most basic thing they can give you is like a 10 by 10 space. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, 10 by 10.
Okay. And what do they provide you with when you procure that through the show? Is it literally just the floor, nothing else? Do they supply pipe and drape, or like are like power and like internet included? How does all that stuff work?
Yeah, pipe and drape and a 8-foot table, I believe. Oh, April. Okay.
6 feet.
Is it 6 feet? Okay.
Yeah.
It feels longer, but because it just feels like it just takes up so much space. But the tables, carpet, and then a waste paper basket, and then 500 watts of electricity is what it's been in the past. But
okay,
I think they can, I mean, they have, I think, changed some of that stuff over the years. So
sure.
It may not be true for
but from your experience recently, that's previously in the neighborhood of what they provided in the past. Gotcha.
Yeah, the electricity I think is separate, but like even though like the carpet and table is free, you have to like still order it, because then otherwise you could show up and it's just like a completely empty 10 foot by 10 foot space.
Okay, right on. Well, that's the kind of stuff I really wanted to know. So, April, as someone who has run logistics more on that stuff, do you remember that for a fact that stuff is like you basically have to opt into that separately to make sure that you have it?
Yes, definitely. Okay. And then it's kind of strange because like it'll be through one vendor, and then the electricity is like through the convention center. So it's like you have to just make all these different accounts to like make sure your one booth is like set up. And they're pretty good at ReadPop of like sending the checklist sending reminders. So it's just like good to double and triple check stuff.
No, for sure. But that's good because like I said, I've noticed it. In my experience, it seems like from the stuff we've done, it's about 50-50, whether the event will have worked out a deal with the vendor to run power or whether they make you buy power specifically from the venue itself. And in my mind, that's just so I'm almost like a little surprised. Like I get why every like events would want to outsource it because then it's just like one more thing they don't have to fucking deal with. But like on the other hand, for an event that's big as PAX and it's like a video game specific thing, so it's like what booth is not going to want power at the event? Like, couldn't you guys just like cut this deal with them and then just roll that into the price just to make it like 10% easier on like everybody who's showing up?
Right. Yeah.
I think it's definitely, I mean, it's targeted towards the bigger players there that could probably just eat away at whatever electric bill. Yeah. And, we just kind of have to deal with it being the smaller people coming in.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point that like if you're, you know, if 2K or something is showing up and they're showing off GTA 6 or whatever, they might need more than 500 watts per station.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I guess that's, you know, good point.
Yeah.
But yeah, that stuff's all good to know because like I said, those are the kind of things I wanted to ask you guys specifically because those are the kind of things that people, like if you've done a similar amount of events even that we have but you haven't done PAX is good to know, or if you've never really done an event before and you're just kind of curious about how all that stuff works. Speaking of other logistics stuff, and this is a little bit more before the show itself, but what is the rough timeline from your guys' recollection of when you have to be in contact with PAX to basically like request the ability to buy booth space?
I think earlier is the better, and I don't know if we have an exact date or anything like that, but like I think it's mostly gets started through email. They don't have any like form or anything like that. Mm. And depending on what they have going on in the year, sometimes it can be slower communication back and forth. So honestly, like even if it's a year out, right, like I don't think it hurts sending an email. And I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, April, but I believe they put you on a list so that like when that stuff is available, you get just blasted with right? And then that's when you can get like sign up for it and stuff like that.
Yeah, like I'd recommend over the summer emailing. And then, you'll get put on a list of who they'll email an exhibitor interest form. And then you fill out the form. And then it's almost like you get onto another list so that they start sending you, like, a bill, basically. Like, here's how much, like, each of these booth spaces would be. And then it's pretty, like, small steps spread out over a long period of time. So I think, like, the sooner that you can reach out, the better. And, like, worst case, they just say it's too early and then you're given a date of, like, when to reach out again. So,
No, it's good to know.
No, that's amazing. Yeah, that's great to hear. And, again, we will, in fact, do that sometime in probably, like, you know, June, July-ish. I'll track down which emails to maybe send a thing to. Because another thing I'll mention specifically that I know for a fact had happened with us for PAX West, and I'm assuming will also happen for PAX East, is when we applied to the when I was just like shooting stuff out into the ether, I think it was last year. I had submitted for PAX Rising for the West Coast. They'll get 10 million submissions and they'll curate like 8 to 10 games and have them, and they're like a prominent place on the show floor. But anybody can submit to it. Yeah. I think it costs like $50 or something to enter that. But if you do enter that and get rejected, which, you know, 99% of people will be.
Yeah.
They did send us emails after the fact that were like, hey, you could buy booth space. Just come to this website and indicate your interest. But I assume that like if you're really dead set on being at the show, you'd probably potentially want to be in communication, as April was describing, even earlier than that. Like if you're like, I am 100% sure we want to do this show, that might not be a thing you want to wait for, but it is another thing that I can say we have had at least that level of experience with.
Yeah, it's probably something you don't like. Again, if you're trying to count on being there, I would definitely go for the booth space. I mean, always we even try for PAX Rising too, but we're like also still getting booths there. But yeah, because technically it's up to their discretion, right? Depending on like who signs up, which kind of players show up, you know, they may decline you, right? And so if you were really counting on that publicity, you may want to just like guarantee the spot.
Yeah.
No, I like that. And as far as cost goes, would you guys say it's in the neighborhood of like just for the booth space? I'm not even talking like the power and all that stuff. It's between like $2,500 and $3,500 probably, give or take.
Yeah, it's definitely like it'll be the lower end of that. I don't know if we can share the exact
number. You don't have to give me a number. Yeah. I'm just trying to give people like a few $2,000, mm-hmm. let's say.
Yeah, definitely like that lower end of that number I would expect. And then that would even like cover like other stuff too going into it, but like budget for that range. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
good to know. Yeah, because again, like I don't need any exact numbers, but I want people to know like roughly in the magnitude of like, mm-hmm. you know, it's a mortgage payment or two or a couple of car payments. Yeah. It's not like $300 for the weekend. Like people should certainly know what
cheap.
They're getting into.
It's definitely not cheap. So you kind of want to make sure you're going into it with a more serious attitude.
No, for sure. And a thing we had just talked about, we had done a little talk at a local game dev meetup a few weeks ago about just demoing shows in general. And the other thing I'll add to that is like, if you can't afford to pay that credit card bill off, like the month that it comes due, I would not do a show like this, like straight up. My one financial piece of advice for indie game development mm-hmm. is don't go into debt making indie games. And so like, if you're going to like ride a PAX weekend on a credit card and like, it's going to be, you know, in total thousands of dollars with hotel and stuff, because mm-hmm. most people probably don't live in the area. Like don't do it unless you have that money set aside. Like if you can pay for it, follow your indie dreams. That's what we're all trying to do here. And like, it's not worth
ruining your life.
Getting into significant financial peril to do so. When again, if you just plan, if you plan ahead and take your time, you know, work a few more shifts at Starbucks mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, current job you have that you hate, you can make it work in a safer way that isn't going to like jeopardize your ability to make stuff going forward. So.
Yeah.
When as far as you guys go, when does your planning personally for PAX start over the years? Like, are you guys thinking about it in like that early in the summer or fall in like a really active way? Or is it kind of like the turn of the new year? It becomes more of like, all right, well, we really got to lock this down.
Yeah. So for this PAX, we thought about it pretty early from the game's perspective. So RBA is dropping a fairly big update in a couple days on the 16th. And we had generally had an idea of like, this is the kind of update that we wanted to drop around PAX, more or less like a couple months after we released. So we kind of roadmapped it pretty far in advance. We didn't get the exact amount of content we wanted in for the release, but we were pretty close. And the reason for that, for having timing the update around here, was because we wanted, we wanted to get that pack, ride that PAX wave, kind of get a little bit hype on it, get player feedback before we did the full release of the update. But for the planning of the convention itself, I think that was a lot closer to the date, right, April?
I think so, yeah. A lot of the really early planning was for the actual game itself. We also, like, we chose to sell merch, so there's a lot of, like, kind of planning for that. But I think, like, winter times usually... Because PAX was in March, end of March. I had to think about that.
Yeah.
So it's like winter time. Yeah. Like that's when we're usually like starting to talk about like, how we want to sell merch and bundle stuff and like really create a solid timeline for development. Start talking about like booth layout. Because we also wanted to talk about how we could maximize the space so that more people could play mm-hmm. and like feel comfortable taking some time to play and like strike that balance between like having a chance for like the line to move but also not feel so rushed.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a hard flow to hit.
No, yeah, for sure. Yeah. That was going to be one of my next questions, but actually since you mentioned it, I'll ask this just as it occurred to me. When you guys were selling merch, is that any kind of separate deal you have to agree with the event or the venue in terms of like, do you have to sign something else or to be able to sell stuff, or is it just like whatever?
No, but I believe the state of Massachusetts wants its cut, so just make sure that you follow whatever tax laws.
Gotcha.
If you go in selling stuff, which I think for the most part in Mass, I mean, living here, it's not too bad to figure that stuff out. But I think you can get like a temporary ID or something like that and just submit whatever sales tax information you have after the event.
Okay, good to know. No, that's awesome. And then as far as merch stuff, what were you guys just selling like codes and stuff, or did you have other like physical things that you had to like pre-acquire beforehand? And like, did you have to plan for like, oh, we maybe we'll sell 500 of these, let's order that many or whatever?
We've got like pins, we've got so the venue doesn't allow stickers because probably at some point when people were just sticking stickers everywhere and they hate peeling that crap off. We have got like a lot of cool stuff like posters, postcards, this like really cool 3D standee. This past PAX we did something really cool. Our composer, he's really into cassettes.
Oh, nice.
And he put the soundtrack onto these cassettes that actually work. And
oh, that's neat.
We actually sold out of those, which is wild. I didn't quite expect that, honestly. And it's just one of those things that I think people are really into, the novelty of.
Yeah, people like a weird thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then we also did codes, which April did an awesome job at making that look so professional and good. I don't know if you want to chat about that.
Yeah, I just wanted the codes to, I know it's like kind of a minor detail, but usually when I get a Steam key from like other devs or when I just attend cons, it's like small pieces of paper that I'm like really scared I'm gonna lose. So then I was like, okay, what's something like big enough that you're not just gonna like, it's very obvious if you've dropped it, but then small enough that you can like carry it around. Yeah. So yeah, I think they're not business card size, they're like maybe almost note card sized. Yeah, something, and then smaller. I wanted it to have our, yeah, like our logo and stuff like that. Just like, I think the branding stuff's pretty important. Because we could just like print the keys on like a piece of printer paper. Oh, and then Steam like requires like some instructions and then disclosure that it's like early access and what that means. Like they have a whole bunch of language that they require on physical Steam keys. So then, yeah, like it's just making sure all of that's legible. And like I said, still a good size. It's a lot of paper cutting. That's for sure. I can understand why people do like the printer, like printouts, and then it's just a lot of like repetitive work. So I usually throw Netflix on or something, and then
we have
a paper cutter now. So
yeah, we've done flyers for almost the entire time.
Yeah, just that like link to the Steam page
and,
or whatever.
Yeah, but. At one point we might have had, I don't think we've ever gotten them like pre-cut. I think we've always just cut them ourselves because, like, you've had access to a paper cutter like through your dad.
Well, yeah, again, because those are like
those
aren't even like a product we sell. That's like a thing we're giving away. Yeah. And I'm very cheap. So yeah. Exactly. I'll put like a 4x4 or 6x6 grid on regular printer paper, and like you said, that's me on like an evening on a weekend. I'll just sit there cutting them all up.
Yeah,
like, a little piece. Yeah.
I didn't plan though. We ran out of Steam keys. And this is just kind of a tangent now, but
they had
a FedEx there. So I like quickly, when we like got keys from Steam, thankfully, and then I like quickly set up the template. But I do this thing at home where I'll like make sure things are lined up. So then when we cut it, it's not like things are getting cut off because it gets printed front and back. They had like this laser cutter. I don't know. I feel old now, but like it was super high tech. It was like just cutting stacks of paper with a laser basically all at once. And I was like, this is a game changer. But then they came out all uneven. So I had to like hand cut them.
Trim the edges a little bit and stuff. No, for sure.
Yeah. But
we live in the future. So the future is terrible.
Mixed practical results, but still like really neat technology. Uh-huh.
It is worth to note, anyone planning to attack 10 packs, that while it is nice that they have the FedEx there to just in case you really need to print on them, the prices are absolutely jacked up. and it should be used as an emergency. don't plan on printing stuff there.
Is it like attached to the convention center?
Yeah, it's like right there.
Okay,
it's really nice. You can like put an order in and go and pick it up. But yeah,
I think people were using them for shipping too. So like,
right?
Yeah. Okay, that makes a lot of sense too.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
Absolutely. Try to plan that before if you got stuff to print. Don't show up there because it's really really pricey.
I'm not surprised at all.
For sure. But like you said, for something like that, like that's probably the one case where it is worth it. Like, since you're generating a product that will generate revenue, so if you're literally going to print Steam keys, like, that's a, you know, got to spend money to make money at that point. Whereas, if it's something more like just like a little handout or whatever that you just want to give to people that doesn't necessarily turn into more money, maybe try to plan that stuff ahead or get it. Because we've done that before, like, same thing.
We've made emergency Staples runs.
Yeah, like, between days of shows, and be like, oh, we basically ran out of flyers. I'll put in a Staples order and go get it in two hours or whatever.
Oh, we really should have made flyers.
But like I said, that's like that's not a revenue generating prospect directly in the same way that like, oh, we need well, here's another side question to that. Have you guys ever had any issues? Like, is that the only time that's happened live at an event, or has that ever happened before? And have you ever had any issues with Steam authorizing the number of codes you wanted to spit out? Or have they just like greenlit it, like rubber stamped basically anything you requested?
Thankfully, they've always gave the thumbs up. They always recommend order like smaller amounts than larger, because I think if you place an order for thousands of keys, they may like be like, what are you doing? What's going on?
Yeah, hey.
But generally we try to plan it with a certain number, and I even put in the request like, hey, these are going to be sold at cons, and they do give the thumbs up for it. It is something though that like I've noticed the turnaround time on the approval is like anywhere from like literally 2 hours to like it could be 3 days or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we got super lucky at PAX. Yeah, we ran out of keys, which is something that we weren't quite expecting. And I'm like, all right, I'll put it in the order. We'll see if they even approve it, because like they may not, not until PAX is over. But I think it was like a couple hours later when we got the email, thank God.
Yeah.
And then April just went off and printed them and cut them. And yeah, we were only down, I think, for a couple hours without keys, which was nice.
That's a sharp
turnaround. Yeah, so it worked out.
No, that's amazing. And that's a nice problem to have to sell more than you expected.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it was a great feeling, because it's been a slog until now.
For sure.
But yeah.
Well, speaking of, I think that'll kind of segue me into the next question I had specifically, which was, what has your guys' foot traffic been like over the years? I know we talked about this a little bit in person at MAGFest, but has it for the most part been like a nonstop? Like, all right, there's pretty much always somebody queued up, or does it wax and wane a little more like some of the other events that we've been into in the past?
I can actually get for certain numbers up here. I feel like it goes like. Thursdays and Sundays are kind of similar. They can be pretty steady days, but they're not like super intense. And then like Fridays, it picks up a lot more. And Saturday is usually insane, like the amount of people.
We're just waiting in lines for like
everything,
half an hour. And
yeah,
I think we had people playing our demo. We would like set a time, maybe like 12 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And yeah, people ask us like, oh, why 12 to 15? I'm like, I don't know, it just seems like a sweet spot, I guess, because like 20 feels too long and 10 feels too short. So that's what we're doing. And I guess other booths were doing like 20 to 25 minutes, but I think they were like more like story driven or what's the word I'm looking for? Just like
narrative based.
You kind of, you like needed more.
There was more spin up time to like get a like person onboarded, basically.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. No,
that makes a lot of sense, because again, that's going to vary from project to project, straight up, depending on either like how dense your game is mechanically, or like you're describing, how narrative driven it is. Because if you have to like read a decent amount of text to understand the story and stuff like that, you know, the average person's reading speed is probably not super fast, so you have to account for that in your game.
That was even something that I'd talked about with the Slime 64 guys who are behind us at MAGFest. Like, they have a demo that's up like on Steam or available on Steam or whatever, that's like 2 hours, and like we used to have it just like unclocked, like it was, you just could play, and people would play for so long. So now their demo has a built-in 15 minute timer that doesn't surface until like there's 5 minutes left or whatever, and then it shows the player, so like, okay, it's time to go, and then like it'll end up, because they're like, yeah, like it was just unmanageable, like it was just, people weren't moving, people would walk away because there just was never an available thing. I mean, you can only run so many stations.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend having a timer, and it could be built into the game, or actually what we've done is just like literally a physical timer that we put at stations that beeps at some point. The physical timer is nice, because like you can take it away when it's not as busy anymore. Or like, you know, the line's manageable. The downside to it is just that when it does get crazy, and like if someone shows up to interview you, or we're all kind of engaged, maybe making a sale or something like that, then it's like, less automation is worse.
It's harder
then,
to micromanage at that point.
Yeah.
For sure.
Three timers going off and you're just like, where am I?
Like, oh God, the oven's still on.
Yeah.
Right on.
Real number here. We, you know, this past time we got a little bit better, and we actually started automatically recording stuff like statistics, and we had 500 plays. Like with the last pack. So, which again, that was what were we doing for timing wise for when it was getting really busy? April, you said 12 minutes, right?
Yeah, I'd say about 12.
So that was pretty good. 8 hour days, I think.
Yeah.
There's a point where it's just like, even though Saturday's really busy, it just maxes out, and you like can't take in all the people that are there.
Oh yeah, like, no, you get overloaded.
No, for sure. Yeah. But that, like I said, on the one hand, that's like, in the moment, I'm sure it's really hectic to deal with, but ultimately that's a good problem to have, because like, ideally that's what you want. If you're going to spend the time and energy to go out and show a thing, you know, if you can have close to 100% uptime on player engagement, like that's certainly really cool to hear.
Right. And it's nice, like the people that are a bit more chatty in line, it's like you start to just get to know some of the people that are trying your game out, and like you learn more about their cosplay or like what kind of games they like, and usually that's how we're able to like have some pretty good conversation. So definitely like some pros to it as well.
Yeah, definitely.
No, that's really cool. But yeah, that was going to be one of the other things I was going to ask specifically about. When you guys have done PAX in the past, what has your crew been like? Has it just been the two of you guys? Have you ever had the third developer come to those events, or have other friends or family come and help you out at all? Or
yeah, thankfully it's been us three always. So me, April, and then the other dev, Mike. And then we've always had at least one extra hand.
Okay.
And then starting last year, the composer also joined in too.
Nice.
He enjoys that. And then this year I had a buddy also pitch in. So, in exchange, we try to we get them a badge and mm-hmm. they help us out, because it is a pretty crazy event. And then, make sure you give them time to be able to go see PAX themselves and kind of enjoy it, because it is a whole experience, right? Why I think I loved MAGFest so much, is because I haven't really attended. I mean, I know I've been to the past three PAX, but I haven't really attended them.
Yeah, you haven't gone to PAX. You've shown at PAX. There's a difference.
PAX, and the 2 hours that I spend on Sunday walking around and just kind of seeing other booths and maybe playing a game or two isn't quite the experience.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, MAGFest is nice because we could actually go afterwards and attend the stuff.
Yeah, the 24-hour thing was while daunting up front, was actually really convenient in a lot of ways for MAGFest.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, PAX has panels too, so it's cool if you can attend them. But then we started realizing, because Garrett, our composer, had some panels on his list that he wanted to go to, and he'd go maybe half an hour early. But the lines would be super long,
yeah.
And then the seating would max out, so it's you have to go even earlier. So the way that we were kind of trying to time it with our booth staffing, it was we'd have to be gone longer than I think we had originally
hoped
planned
for.
So so just if you have more people that are helping out with the booth, I think we had a pretty good drive going, but just if there are things that people want to see for sure, making some extra time for the waiting and making sure you get a spot. So
no, that's awesome. That's really good. And like I said, I think you guys are doing it right, because if you have that ability to if the general team of people who've touched the game is large enough where you can requisition a couple of people, or like I said, if you've got a friend or family mm-hmm. member who'd be hey,
yeah,
you want to come spend a weekend with me, you'll have to work a little bit, but I can I'll put up the hotel money, and like you said, I'll get you a badge, so I'll try to make it worth your while to at least have some amount of fun over this weekend, and you can pitch in a little bit. But yeah, that is a lot to do again for one to a handful of people. That's a lot of work. So
It's a lot for one, or it's a lot. It's a ton, and I probably would not recommend it for one person. For two people, you could maybe get away with it, but I still probably wouldn't recommend it. I think a third person, three, is probably the
mm-hmm. again. Even if that person just there is a pivot to all right, I got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go eat a sandwich or whatever. I'm gonna go take five or ten. No, for sure.
Because you only have so much space in your booth too. There was one year where all of us, I think there were four or five of us, and it was just super crowded.
Mm-hmm.
It just made sense for someone to go do something or go eat,
go stretch your legs, either standing in one spot or sitting for a long time. It just gets a little you just got to go move.
yeah,
that's great. And then I think one of the last questions I had specifically was kind of in this similar vein too of time management and distributing people, but you guys had talked about how in the start of the show there's a 1 hour press thing, but I assume over the course of the event you might have other people that either you've arranged meetings with beforehand or who might show up who are press credentialed, and how do you guys manage that in terms of making sure those folks have a priority to talk to someone who's making the game and to play a demo, to make sure that there is a unit available for them to try out?
Yeah, I mean, ideally you try to set up as many stations as you financially can and mm-hmm. feel comfortable with doing. April was talking about it, but this was our first year where we bumped it up from two stations to four, which just in general helps you figure this problem out a lot easier, just because the more people you have going through, the more opportunity you have if someone shows up that kind of has a little bit more influence, could potentially have more influence over showing your game to the world.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this person's just finishing up, I can throw you in. Generally, though, you'll probably want to schedule beforehand. We've had teams help us with that in the past. And, when you know that they're about to come, April printed off these reserve signs, and they have
smart.
Kind of our brand, branding on it and stuff like that. And we'll throw it on a station. And once it opens up, maybe 10 minutes before that they're supposed to show up, mm-hmm. and we'll keep it on about 10 minutes after their assigned time, because sometimes someone doesn't show up to the scheduled appointment. You never know, they got busy, they just got a better offer somewhere else, I don't know.
Right.
But every once in a while too, they'll be like, they'll come out 2 hours later. They're just like, we really tried. We couldn't make it, but like, we're here now. So, and then you just like try to fit them in. So,
yeah, people seem pretty understanding too. Like, we tried to make it transparent to folks who were waiting in line. Like, oh, there's like press here. Like, we're not just like letting someone just budge in front of you. Like, here's something that we can like give you just like to thank you for waiting, or like,
yeah,
we want you to have some extra time to play, or whatever it might be. So people know that we like notice like that you've been waiting here, and like this like circumstance came up, and like people were pretty understanding, I think, of.
No, that's super smart, because I never would have thought of any of that. But like, hey, having a little reserve signs, that's a great little tip.
Yeah.
Like you said, even having like a little bit of candy or like a bottle of water or something. I'm just like, hey, sorry about this. Here's that. Another thought that I had that like I'm going to throw this out there live and see if you guys think it would work or if it might be too much of a thing with just everything else going on. But in the back of my mind was like, I wonder if you just brought like a Steam Deck or two. And so you've got like for the people, rank and file people coming through, they sit down at a station. Yeah. But like, I'm not worried about a journalist stealing my Steam Deck. So like when they roll up, I just like whip this out of my backpack and like, all right, here's the game.
I mean, yeah, that was, we kind of had backup plans that were sort of like that if things got really bad. I don't think it's a bad idea. Like some of the bigger booths, they have like literally dedicated areas that they will bring.
Yeah, like a little like kind of partitioned off space that is just for press. Yeah.
And I mean, it's kind of, I feel like, a similar vibe of what you're doing, but you know, the indie way.
Right, 100%.
I don't think it's a bad idea, like, especially again, like, you know, if it's, you know, just like a backup plan or something like that.
Exactly. Right. Mm-hmm. If all else fails, like, all right, I've got another build over here on a device that, like, you know, it's got battery and technically it's got speakers and stuff. You don't need to do anything else except lay your hands on it and play it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Another tip I would say, I just thought, sorry, is so we had two like seated spots, and then.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had like a round table with like two monitors on it, so those were seated, and then we had TVs, so people were standing. But sometimes like folks would need, like, for medical reasons, just need to sit somewhere, but maybe they didn't have a stool with them, so like it's just helpful to like have some additional seating if like if you do have standing space in case someone like needs it. So then you're not like, there was one point we were kind of like shuffling chairs around because we just didn't have enough, but like now in retrospect I would just have like a folded up stool somewhere just like in case someone needs it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's real smart. Or, and actually,
at the bare minimum, like a seat per station, if you can manage it. Because, like, I honestly think anything more than that's a little excessive. Like, if somebody's got someone with them and they have, and they're not playing, they're just there with them and are not, like, actively doing the demo, it's kind of, like, I don't know, a lot to, like, also offer them a seat. Like, if you have a full booth and you're trying to get people through, like, that's just kind of more clutter than you can handle.
Right.
Because I didn't ask about this specifically, but do you recall if the convention supplied table, did that come with a set of like four or so chairs, or was that like a thing you guys had to consider separately?
Two chairs, yeah. Okay. Comes with two chairs.
Gotcha. So if you want more than that, it's just one more thing you have to pile up. Bring with you. Okay. Good to know. I think that's most of the specific stuff I wanted to ask. Lorraine, do you have any lingering specific thoughts or anything that you wanted to throw out there?
I barely have any thoughts at the moment.
Do you guys have either of you have any other tips, tricks, or thoughts about how people can make the most of their time at like a huge event like PAX?
I think I would try other cons first, right? Like get
build up,
especially
to it.
Build up to it. I like we've learned so much from other cons, and then like I feel like we were able to maximize our time at PAX that way. And you know, the thing is, you really need to consider like your type of game at an event like PAX. We talked about like a narrative driven game. It would be really hard to do at PAX, especially from like an indie perspective and like maybe a budget, like if you were really budget considerate, because like, you know, you want use PAX to get like maximum exposure, but like if you have a narrative game, then you only have like two stations and maybe it takes 30 minutes to even get into your game, right? You might want to think about how to do that. You may want to trial it at other events before you even do something like PAX.
I feel like the idea of a like more curated demo build for something like that is like almost essential for games like that at that kind of station of like display.
Yes. And I think like if you're going to have a longer, because I think a lot of narrative games actually do pretty well at PAX, but you have to just be really thoughtful about it. So like sometimes it's helpful to have, and that's why we have the TVs, because then people can like see what other players are doing, like they can still watch what's going on and then kind of decide if they want to wait, like maybe move on and come back when it's quieter and things like that. Yeah. So there's like different ways to show your game without taking up station, especially if it's going to take a bit more time. But I agree with Chris. I think having some other experiences so that you kind of know how you want the player experience to be at PAX, it's pretty important.
No, for sure.
Especially with how much money you're
Yeah. And like I said,
People are traveling.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So many people.
Yeah. I can speak for that from experience too. Like I said, I think by next year we'll be in really good shape to show at PAX and probably have a decent time doing it. But that's been that will for us have been a culmination of like basically the last 2 years of showing at other events and making changes and making the game a little bit better at each time. And that was a thing we talked about specifically at that other local meetup again of like, I kind of like separated things into like three tiers of events where it's like local stuff that you just go to for an afternoon, like regional stuff that's like, you know, a 2-3 hour drive maybe, but still probably requires a hotel stay. And then like further stuff out that's like, you're going to either need to fly or like have a full travel day to get there or whatever. Mm-hmm. And for that last tier of stuff, which, you know, for us and anybody who's not in the immediate cities where they're going to be happening, will be an event like PAX. I would say similar to what you already said, Chris, I wouldn't show up to an event like that with like even an early beta. Like I would show up with a game that is pretty representative, at least the section you intend to vend to people of what the final product is. So like no prototype art, the gameplay should be pretty damn close to what the final product like intends to be. You should know what your product is by the time you're laying out that much money and effort, I think.
It is cool when people, like if you've done other events, like we've had folks from like MAGFest and like smaller cons in Maine that have been like, oh, I played your game at this other event. It's like, oh, this is really cool. And they'll like notice
the changes and stuff like that.
The changes that you've made. Yeah, like people definitely notice. So I do think it's worth like for that. That's another reason that it's cool to do other events because people will be like, oh, I remember this from.
That's also exciting too. It's nice. It's nice when people like when a thing you made enough of an impression on somebody that they did remember it. Like, oh yeah, I saw you guys at that other thing. Right. And I'm like, oh, thank you. I'm so glad that like we took up that much of your memory that you like recall this game we made.
Yeah. Another rec I would have is load up on vitamin C weeks beforehand because I think it's called Pax Pox. I don't.
Oh sure.
Or just the generic con funk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like inevitable that you'll get some kind of. Actually, I think I steered clear of everything, but you're just exposed to a lot more
stuff. Especially at something at the scale of PAX, it's just so many people. Like, they're just everywhere.
Another tip that I hadn't thought of this before, but then somebody mentioned it at MAGFest, and then I think I'm going to try it at Too Many Games in a couple months here, but like somebody had told me it was just like, yeah, just bring enough throat lozenges to like put one in every 15 minutes or so, just in case you want to. Yeah. So I might try that next time because I have been consistently losing my voice at events by the time things come to a close. I'm like, yeah, maybe that'll help. Maybe if I just like mainline like something to make my throat feel better like the whole time, maybe it'll work out more. I don't know.
But right.
We'll see.
I think another thing, dry running stuff, which also could help with like, you know, think about your pitch. We create create this non-denominational, we call it the non-denominational Bible. and it's just got like different things on it. Like what's your 3-4 sentence pitch of the game? Mm-hmm. What makes your game different than other games in your genre? Why should people play it? What platforms is it on? What date is the release, right? It's just like these things that, you know, 90% of the people are going to ask about your game, and just writing it down and printing that out, handing that out to people that help you with your booth.
Like a script,
just so
basically.
That they have a quick, fact sheet.
A reference,
it.
A fact sheet.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, like, I feel like the big mistake I made their first year of PAX, because I was like, I think overly excited and whatever, is like, I just like was just talking about RBA so much, and like people were sold on it, like they were fine, and like we had stations open, and like I was just like still describing the game to them, and I was just like, it took me a while to learn, just be like, people just want to play it, right? Just like let them sit down, play the game, get your quick pitch out there, save your breath, save your throat, save your voice from because it's a long weekend, so don't go too hard onto it.
No, for sure. That's great advice. Because, again, that's a thing I think we've learned in practice, too, of, like, a really refined, like you said, put the game front and center, say, like, one or two things about it that, like, make it stand out relative to other things.
And
like,
let them see it.
Yeah. And then just let them experience it. Another thing I will say, which, again, we have, like, it's come up here and there, but I think it'll be more relevant at something like PAX than ever, is, like, if you have the capacity, get a website up, put a press page on it. And have a link to that so that like for those type of folks, for journalists or whatever, like if you have something you could hand out like that has all information on it, great. But if you could just point them like, go to this one URL and then you can go here and like the release date, game title, some screenshots, you know, all that
what
shit.
What is the one who made the one we used, Dustin?
The Rami.
The PHP thing.
Yeah,
it's great.
Like, that's
100%.
Every indie,
he made it.
Indie pretty much.
Yeah, just use it. It's very intuitive.
But yeah, it's extremely
really
easy.
Well.
You don't need to know web design to edit it. You just need to know how to like do a basic text editor.
Yeah.
I mean, we use that initially, and then I think we even went simpler. We went to a Google Drive folder. It's just a lot easier to even update. You just have different folders and Word docs in there.
But same principle of like one place where you can be like, hey, if you want any of the stuff that you need to like write a little article about this or whatever, like you want the fact sheet, you can go to this one spot.
Yep.
We've got like the key art here you can use for references. We have screenshots, logo, like pitch on us, pitch on the games themselves, all the information you need to know. It's just right here. Convenient.
I forgot even we hand out thumb drives to certain media. Just make sure you've got like the game name on the thumb drive or something like that.
Make it not just like a SanDisk whatever. Like you need you need something on there to make them remember it, much like a business card.
No, that's smart.
They love that too, because like they go back to their hotel and they start working on an article or a video, right? And then they have the. They don't have to search for the media anywhere. They don't have to download it on the slow hotel Wi-Fi. It's just, it's got the key art on it. It's got like whatever. It's really good to have that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to keep that in mind too. Because again, the whole point being, you're expending all this effort. You put out a ton of effort to make the game. You put out a ton of effort to go to this place to show the game. If someone shows interest on it, especially if there's someone at that level who can get further attention, you want to make it as easy for them as possible to go to bat for your thing. So the less barriers that they have to talking about your product, the better.
Because they're working there too. Like, especially at something like PAX, like just the magnitude of it from like a journalism reporting standpoint, like you want to be able to get stuff out. You want to tell people what is there, people who aren't there, so they can see like what you saw and like what really stuck out to you, because that's what they're looking for. And if you can just like, here's the information right here all in front of you, like that's even better.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You also never know who you're talking to.
No.
That's another thing. We didn't have anyone scheduled from Kotaku, but we got in a Kotaku article, which was awesome. But someone from our team talked to them. I have no idea who.
That's amazing.
But
they did well, apparently.
They did well, right? Nice. Which is pretty cool, because it could have been even someone that wasn't really on the project. It could have been my friend.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the fact sheet worked, where he was just reading off stuff from the fact sheet, right?
But, sure.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Be prepared, right?
No, that's wonderful. Well, I think that's pretty much everything I wanted to discuss. So thank you guys so much for
thank you.
Taking the time to talk to us about this. I this was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I definitely want to get back into the habit of like, because for me, it's just like you got to take the time on top of doing everything else to touch base with people. But I want to like get back into streaming more games again and talking to other devs. So it's a thing I think we're going to try to do more of in the future. And like I said, including you guys, hit me up the next time you want to talk about RBA in like a game specific context, and I'd love to have that conversation as the game approaches 1.0 and beyond.
Right. Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much. You guys are awesome.
Before we wrap things up, where do you want people to go to learn about Rightfully Barry Arms or the studio or anything else in between? Plug whatever you got.
I think the easiest way is rbagame.com. It goes to links to our socials, links to our Steam page there. You can follow us wherever you want. If we update to any other platform, it would be posted there as well. So,
excellent.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for hanging out. We really appreciate it. I think I'll give our little rigmarole and we'll call it a show. But if you're out there and you've got an indie game that you'd like us to check out, we love looking at stuff. Email us at podcast@cubicorngames.com. We'll try to give it a look. You can subscribe to this podcast pretty much any place podcasts are found, and you can check out the games we're working on by searching Cubicorn Games on Steam.
And find us kind of all over the place, socials.
Yeah,
and
Cubicorn Games, pretty much everywhere. You'll figure it out. Cubicorngames.com. Yeah. It's a website. It exists. I'm going to update it in the next day or two.
Yeah.
But yeah, with all that said, thank you, Chris and April, so much for taking the time. We really, really appreciate it. And just as another aside, it's still been a pleasure like meeting you guys and hanging out a little bit. Like I said, that's been our experience in general. Is usually whenever we go to events, we have one or two people that we meet and like are really excited to talk to and really jive with. And I'm one of the reasons I'm really glad we got to go to MAGFest was to meet you two. So I'm looking forward to hanging out again at Too Many Games in a couple months here.
We're excited.
Both be there.
Get the team back together. Get the band going. Let's go.
Oh, for sure.
Tearing up Philly.
That's right. Double fist and cheesesteaks until I pass out.
Let's go.
Stealing the Liberty Bell.
That's right. Again, thank you guys so much. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you, Lorraine,
thank you.
Hanging out as always. And yeah, thank you anyone on the internet who's listening. We really appreciate it. Yeah. So we're going to call it a show. Thank you so much. Stay safe out there, and we'll be back in a couple weeks with more podcasts.
Bye.
Now my cat's going to yell, and I'm going to go turn on the